You know, and sourcing heroes are the people that help procurement teams go from being tactical and transactional to being strategic.
Welcome, everyone, to The Sourcing Hero. I have Phil Eidson on the show today, along with our CEO, Anthony Clairvy. Phil, it's good to see you. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you very much for inviting me, Catherine. I really appreciate it.
We're so excited to have you. You're a guy in procurement that doesn't need much introduction, but for those of you that don't know, Phil has been in procurement for 20 years now. He has had many successful roles. I believe you've told me you've kind of jumped around in different areas of procurement.
Yeah.
You've now landed in a consulting type of position and influencer position. I know you don't like that term, but Art of Procurement is your brand.
Yeah.
And so that's the main draw for people in procurement, is to hear from you, your experiences. And that is why we have you on the show today. I'm hoping that we can have a recurring show with you every month.
You may not say that after the first one, Catherine. You may think,
we're
not going to invite him back.
Well, I want you to tell me what you think about this. I've been thinking hard about how we're going to package that monthly.
Genius.
Yes.
You're too kind.
At a random moment last night, I thought about, well, your whole deal is the art of procurement.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're having you on so that you can share your experiences. Why don't we have the Art of Phil Eidson?
Oh, I see what you did there.
Yeah. You know, yeah. As long as, you know, I can, I don't know, pretend to know what I'm talking about in that. And then everyone who doesn't see what, you know, the sausage factory behind my brain that really goes on, then, you know, that's good with me.
People really want to know. And part of that would be, in a small parenthesis under that title, would be Ask Phil Almost Anything.
Yeah. You know, I'd love to answer some questions. Like, you know, that's one of the things that's really cool about doing the podcast and the questions that we sometimes get. And, you know, in that format, what I do, I don't really get the opportunity to answer many of them. So, you know, yeah, I'd love to do something like that.
Q&A.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'd pose to our audience on social, I don't know, a couple times a month. Hey, what do you want to ask Phil in this month's installation of The Art of Phil Eidson, and see what we get. And maybe we can choose a few. You can choose the ones that make the most sense to talk about.
Any of the ones about soccer? I'll take those first.
Is it soccer or football?
Well, it depends what I'm talking to. You know, I've got to make sure that here I call it soccer, but it still pains me every single time I use that word. So it's still really football.
You don't have to use the S word. Okay, well, I'm glad you like that. I'm really proud of that, even though it didn't take much creativity, because you've already figured out the art of procurement. Now we get to dive into Phil's brain.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
Scary. It's easier being on the other side, where, you know, I can ask all the difficult questions.
Right.
And I get to think, you know what? I'm glad I didn't ask, you know, I'm glad I didn't have to answer that question. So I guess here we go.
Absolutely.
We've had several conversations, and I feel like you're such a natural fit to come on to The Sourcing Hero, because we want to talk about the stories that empower procurement and give a little bit of hope and encouragement to people in procurement that are perhaps in tough situations or need a little bit of education, some guidance to get through certain situations. And so I wanted to ask you, in your experience, what does Sourcing Hero mean to you?
Yeah, and it's an interesting term, because, you know, what's a hero? A hero is somebody that is admired, you know, that people look up to, that are inspired by, that they want to kind of be like them in some regards. And, you know, I think when I think about that from a sourcing, from a procurement perspective, you know, what's somebody who's successful in procurement, in sourcing? What's somebody to look up to? And it's somebody who's really been able to become a trusted advisor to their organizations. You know, it's really easy in procurement for procurement professionals to, I don't know, it's kind of, you know, sit behind the computer, follow the processes, do the things that you think that you need to do to kind of check some boxes. And, you know, I say that because I've been there. And it's a lot harder to really be proactive and to, you know, think about how you're going to make a difference for your organization, and how you're going to have folks in your organization look at you and say, you know what, while I hate this term and I say to everybody, I hate the term seat at the table, it's, you know, how are you part of the conversation? Because, you know, what you're doing is looking at, you're taking advantage of what you know about supply markets, about suppliers, about innovation that happens, you know, all in your area of expertise, and you're bringing that into the business and actually helping your business be more effective. You know, to, again, it's kind of cliche and a management consultant speak, but, you know, driving better outcomes for the business and doing that more effectively than competition, than your competition is. You know, to me, that's someone who's a sourcing hero, who's able to do that. It's not necessarily the procurement, you know, 9 to 5. It's how do I use my expertise and my knowledge around supply markets to help my business do things better?
I love that. Have you known a few sourcing heroes in your time?
It's interesting. So I would say, you know, yes, there's always people that you come across who are successful in doing that. And one of the things that I found is really hard for companies to scale it. That's actually one of the things that we're kind of really passionate about, trying to help companies scale that amongst their teams, because I see it's very much down to individuals and individual mindset. And, you know, that's where I think it's something that is within all of us within procurement, but it takes you to think a little bit differently than perhaps, you know, what you did when you came into the profession as things have changed in the profession.
That makes me think about the story that you told me. And I will say, I think sourcing heroes or the soon to be up and comers could use a little encouragement from other leaders and procurement. And that's why we're here. I would love for our audience to be able to hear your source of inspiration when you are coming up in procurement.
Yeah.
Tell me about a time where perhaps you faced some adversity and how you came through on the other side.
Yeah. And you know, this is a story that I haven't really told publicly before. And it was the very first job that I was in within procurement. And, you know, I came into this, so I'd done my university degree. I did it in just general business and marketing. Certainly no procurement in there. I had no clue what procurement was, no idea what a buyer was, no idea what purchasing was. And I joined an automotive company. I joined Ford Motor Company and was placed in one of their divisions who actually spun off. So it was really like a tier one automotive manufacturing company at that point. And I was on the job rotation scheme, and the rotation scheme was going to be, you know, 9 months in HR, 9 months in marketing, 9 months in operations, and 9 months as a buyer, I guess. And I drew what I thought was a short straw, and I got placed in purchasing first. Like, okay, what the heck's this? You know, and I went into this role that I had nothing about, that I didn't even know what they did, you know, and got the bug pretty early in terms of, this is actually pretty interesting. You know, here I am 20 years old and they're giving me £20 million worth of responsibility and, you know, getting the chance to travel a bunch. It's like, okay, this seems like it's not too bad. But the first boss that I had, and, you know, this is with me not having a clue about anything to do with purchasing, as it was called at the time in this organization. This boss was somebody who, you know, he was an expat. He'd come over from the States to the UK. He'd been there for a while. He was just counting down the days to his retirement. And honestly, he was a bully, you know, and every time I did something wrong or I didn't necessarily do something in line with what he wanted, I'd just get, you know, called to his office and I'd get shouted out and sworn at and, you know, all kinds of things that I could probably go to HR today. And, you know, he'd be in a whole world of trouble. But, you know, 20 years ago, you just kind of shut your mouth and got on with it. And that was kind of really difficult for me. Because here I didn't have any confidence. You know, like most of us, I'm a very confidence-driven person. So I had zero confidence. I didn't really feel like I knew what the job was. My portfolio of stuff was, you know, those problems with suppliers and problems with our client. And I was thinking it's all my fault. And he just wasn't encouraging. He was like kind of encouraging me to think that way, if you will, that it's all my fault because it was easier for him. And I'd have to do things like go down the pub to get him to sign letters. And then I'd get in trouble then the next day for showing him up in front of all of his friends. Yeah. So, you know, this was in manufacturing. And so we'd often need to get letters of intent to go and, you know, kick suppliers off with new tooling or changes to tooling. And so what he'd do, he'd come into the office, you know, at 9 o'clock. By 11 o'clock, he'd left to go to the local pool hall in the town that the office was in. And so if I needed something urgently signed, I'd have to go to the pool hall. and get him to sign it in front of all, you know, his friends at the pool hall. And, you know, I'd go down there. I remember one particular time, really the first time I did this, I went down there because he told me to. And, you know, in front of all his friends, like, oh, here's my rookie and blah, 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 you know, slaps on the back and meet all my friends and all that kind of stuff. Sign the letter, you know, the next time he comes into the office the next morning, it's like, you just don't you ever do that again. You embarrassed me in front of all my friends. Yeah, I got in real trouble for going down and getting this letter signed. So that was my welcome and introduction to procurement.
The guy sounds like a derelict. I mean, I said it.
He, you know,
I mean, I hate the name call, but it's just like, come on, just a punk. I mean,
yeah, I mean, he was, you know, old school automotive, you know, beat the fist on the table kind of person who didn't care about anything except for getting his package. You know, he'd talk about the fact that if the director, well, he was director level, but if our local like VP of procurement came down the hallway waving a package in the air, then he knows where to find him.
Sure.
So that's all. Unfortunately, like 9 months later, he got his package.
Well, good for him.
So, you know, and when he left, so, you know, kind of in the office, everybody knew what this guy was like to me.
Sure.
And the final parting words when he left was, you need to shape up, boy.
Classy.
And so one of my colleagues put that on a certificate. They made this certificate of appreciation that I could put, that I could pin to my cube that said, you know, certificate of appreciation to Philip, you need to shape up, boy, Idson. And then with a picture of this guy's name and a fake signature, which I kept for like 3 or 4 years.
Sure.
In front of me to know that things could never get that bad again. And yeah, I mean, that's kind of my welcome to purchasing.
Huh.
And I'm not really sure how I stuck with it, you know, based on that initial experience, but it was an interesting one.
So what's the lesson that you took from that? How did you turn that terrible experience into a positive impact?
You know, I think that as I was going through that, what was nice was that the team around me would, you know, they were kind of my support system through all of that. And I did enjoy my job. You know, I was realizing this was something that was actually pretty interesting. But in terms of lessons, you know, one, I'd say the first thing that comes to mind is resilience. You're going to go through some pretty crap times in your career. You know, we've all had them. I've had others since then. You know, you just got to kind of realize that good times will come. And it might not feel like that at the time, but, you know, have faith in yourself, have confidence in yourself, you know, realize that, you know, you more than likely you're doing the right thing and you'll find something where, you know, either you're able to have a bigger impact or you're more appreciated. So I was definitely, like, that made me really determined. I was really determined then to prove him wrong. And that was, you know, just a personal, like, trait in that I've always taken things like that as motivation. So it's actually, you know, a really big motivation for me to, even though he would never, ever know, I know, you know, I knew. And so I was motivated still to want to prove him wrong.
Perform and, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing that I would say is that this sounds creepy. You know, people are always watching. And what I mean by that is, you know, the folks who were, you know, his leadership team, once he left, you know, we were having a big reorganization and I thought, you know, people are going to know nothing about me or they're going to just know really bad things because my boss will have just said really bad things. And so, you know, I went directly to the VP, you know, to try and actually make a pitch for one of the new organizations that was being formed. And this was in automotive when category management was formed for the first time. And I wanted to be part of the team that helped bring in category management. You know, and what I realized is that the boss did know, he knew the good things, not the bad things. He had been taking notice of what I'd been doing and while I hadn't been saying it, you know, I was actually pretty well positioned. And I didn't know that in real time, but, you know, it was actually gave me confidence to know that people may not see and say, oh, you're doing a great job, or, you know, I'm taking notice of what you're doing and all that kind of stuff. But if you do the right thing, you go to work every day trying to do the right thing, then people will notice.
It's good.
I love that story. And I love that you have taken motivation from that. And it sounds like it's kept you going for quite a while.
Yeah. I mean, I can't tell you the number of times I wanted to quit, you know, when I was going through that. But for example, the person that I was closest to on that team is, you know, my best friend. Here we are 20 years later.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, you just form really strong relationships as well, and like through adversity.
Anthony, it sounds like his former boss, his first boss, had no idea about core values.
Yeah, I think the more appropriate way is to say maybe not yes. core value alignment.
Yeah, you know.
He got the raw version of what I was thinking there.
It'd be interesting to see him, you know, take a cultural test or something like that.
Some kind of survey. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's a silly movie, but, you know, you're mad at your dad. You know, like there's probably more going on than we realize. But
yeah.
He said he was at the end of his career, right? So how long were you underneath his leadership?
Yeah, about 9 months.
Okay. So probably about as much as you can do it.
But, you know, I would also say that
he's just insecure. That's what I would say.
Yeah. And, you know, he'd been there. He'd done it. He sure. didn't need it anymore. He was an expat. He was getting paid more money than he could probably have imagined. I'm sure he had a nice retirement package to go to. He wanted for to get Ford back home to Michigan.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure there was a confluence of things going on in his life that, you know, who knows what's going on in other people's lives. But, you know, the way it manifested itself wasn't the best. But, you know, I think the other thing I learned from that is, and I hate to say that I've taken this from a number of different roles that I've been in, is, you know, learn things that you don't want to do as, you know, as much as the things you do. So yes, you can look at a great boss and you see from a great boss, you know, I want to replicate that, or that made me feel good. You know, I'd like to be like that with my team. You know, I kind of took the opposite. I'm going to see things like that, that I know that I didn't like. And so I'm going to make sure that that still shaped me. That still shaped my kind of leadership perspective and all that.
Don't repeat the behavior. Is that what I'm saying?
I'd say everything is a learning experience, you know, whether it's good or bad.
Yeah.
Again, that's kind of hard sometimes when you're in the moment, you know, much easier in hindsight to reflect on things like that. But I mean, that's just got what you got to do. Otherwise, I mean, how else can you handle a situation like that? You got to take some positive from it.
Silver lining.
Yeah.
With that story in mind, how can you repackage that and give some advice to up and coming procurement leaders, maybe that could be in a unfavorable position mm-hmm. or are looking for that next step up, your best advice moving forward?
Yeah. You know, when folks are in difficult situations, you know, I always just try and encourage them to be confident in their own abilities, and that if the situation that they find themselves in right now isn't a situation that is, you know, optimal, don't necessarily take it personally. You know, I think that unfortunately right now, you know, we're going to have a lot of folks who are wondering what's going to be happening with their jobs, you know, with everything that's happening with the pandemic and recession and things like that. And, you know, especially my upbringing in the automotive business to start with, we would go through that every single year. You know, every year, like clockwork, October, November, well, it's usually September, they would announce that they're going to fire, you know, however many hundred people by November. So the whole place would shut down in September, October, and November because everyone's just wondering if they're going to have a job. And that's all we would talk about. And, you know, a lot of folks would be scared, you know, understandably so. And my advice all the time then was just, you know, back yourself again. That if you, you know, focus on being the best in your position that you can be and learning as many skills as you can get. And if you're not appreciated here, and if there's not an opportunity here, there'll always be an opportunity somewhere else. And, you know, I think that that's really important. Again, it's sometimes when you're in that moment of fear, it's really hard to see that again. But just like I say, focus on trying to be better every single day, trying to, you know, don't just kind of sit there and wait for something to happen. Always be really proactive. And whether that's proactively looking for new opportunities, whether that's proactively looking for ways that you can bring value to a stakeholder with some information that you went to find out, whatever that may look like. You know, don't ask for permission is something I always really encourage people.
I love that philosophy, not asking for permission, Anthony. I know you know that.
Yeah, we're well aware of that.
Yeah.
Phil, I think that, you know, the first couple times we've spoken, I could sense so much of the encouragement in your experience and your expertise. And even when you shared on LinkedIn your journey for better health
yeah.
and walking, running.
Which is awesome, by the way. Good for you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Being more present and intentional.
Yeah.
Like, we had that conversation and it took me about 2 days and I decided that, you know what, Phil said he didn't allow himself any excuses. It was about progress every day. Mm-hmm. And after those 2 days, every single day I've been working out.
Awesome.
I've been eating better. And I keep telling myself, Phil said no excuses.
Look at that. Well, having an impact. I love it.
That means so much.
A Motivational Monday email to our company. We all take turns and I put your post up and said how incredible it is that you've taken your skill set from procurement, the analytics, the data, and the motivation of doing better every day, and you've actually put it to work in your personal life. I was so impressed by that, and I'm using that as my inspiration as well to do better. So I just wanted you to know that you do have impact. And I think that your experience and the story that you just told is going to speak to a lot of people out there.
Yeah. One, I can't tell you how much that means. You know, I was obviously inspired by others to go and get myself in gear, you know, where I'd neglected my health for a long time. And, you know, it was like, okay, I can't do this anymore. And, you know, it was really hard for me to post about that online as well. Because, you know, I often, even though I have the podcast, I'm still, you know, sometimes rather be the person at the back of the room rather than the person at the front of the room. And, you know, I don't necessarily like share. It's not that I don't like sharing personal stuff. It's like, I don't want people to misinterpret what I write as being, okay, look at me. You know, it's an ego thing. But, you know, someone on my team kind of pushed me and, you know, I'm fortunate. I'm thankful that they did because the response was amazing. You know, I could never have imagined. And it's funny, like all the calls I have now, it's like the first thing that people talk about. They want to talk about that journey.
It's amazing. What you're able to share, that vulnerability is incredible. The effect that it can have. Mm-hmm.
It's a big deal.
Yep. So every day since, we're still going strong.
Yeah, me too. I haven't gotten to the point where I'm tracking my weight every day in an Excel sheet. I might get there. I might use an app.
I use my app. But, and it gets me sometimes, you know, it doesn't set me off on the best days when I think, you know what, I put all that work in and now I'm up a pound. Like, what the heck? So I get mad with myself sometimes, but, you know, it just keeps me on track, keeps me honest. And then my wife tells me, don't be stupid because, you know, look where you were last week or look where you were 2 weeks ago. So, you know, she sees the bigger picture. I'm looking at it day to day.
That's good.
It's probably a lot easier to take it one day at a time anyways.
I want to go back real quick. So why, if you dealt with the insecure leader and you really enjoyed category management and you talk about, because health and wellness is all about discipline and success is just riddled with discipline. It's, why did you stick with it?
Why did I stick with the job in the early days?
Well, why stick with being a practitioner? Why stay in supply chain management? Just because you liked it? I mean, most people in that kind of environment, especially millennials, I'm going to blame the millennial. I'm barely a millennial. They would just quit and give up. Like, what was different?
You know, I probably have to go deeper into, you know, my family background and things like that. But I was just the first person in my family to have the opportunity to go to university. Wow. You know, I was from, by the time that we had like family issues where, you know, my dad wasn't around that much and I just wanted to prove to my mom that she did a great job in bringing me up, honestly. And that really motivated me.
That's great.
You know, I was earning money that, you know, as a family, we probably couldn't have dreamed of. And here I was at 21, you know, doing that. And so I just wanted to, like, I just wanted to make everyone proud. And I wanted to show that I could do it and that, you know, it was so tempting to, I didn't want to quit, you know, at the first hurdle. And, you know, and I enjoyed the job, you know, I enjoyed the promise of what I thought the job could be. What I really loved about it was somebody would pay for me to travel around the world. So that was what really got me. I was like, okay, if someone's going to pay me to go, like, you know, my first year, I basically spent half the year in Switzerland, in a village in the Alps for a supplier that was, you know, kind of going badly and I didn't have a clue how to fix it.
Sure.
You know, my hotel had a great view. So
the Swiss Alps will do just fine.
Yeah. So things like that, you know, was like, if
21 in the Swiss Alps, am I hearing that right?
Yeah. you know, in various other different places. And very early in my career, getting the chance to go over to Japan and be negotiating, you know, like on a table, me on one side of the table and 20 people from the supplier on the other side of the table with this Union Jack plonked in the middle. And here I am negotiating. It's like, these are just experiences that I could never have dreamed of.
Wow. And to think you could have drawn marketing or business and you ended up in purchasing.
Yeah. And who knows what would have happened, you know? You know, one of the good things about purchasing or procurement that I think I liked is the fact that you still get the, you still see across the business if you want to, you know. Yes, if you don't, then you can be still in your little corner of the world. But if you want to, there is the opportunity. Procurement provides you the opportunity to see across the entire business. And that's something that most functions don't get to see. And that was something that was interesting to me as well.
So your experience has taken you across the globe, several different positions.
Mm-hmm.
And you found yourself at Art of Procurement.
Yeah.
Creating Art of Procurement. Yep. Tell us about that.
Yeah, you know, I'd been a practitioner, as you say. I'd had the fortune to travel around the world, and I lived in India as well for a year, running a shared service center for a manufacturing company. And I'd come over to the States, been in the States a while. And I'd got up to like a head of international procurement. So I'd done well, like early. This was probably by the time I was, I don't know, early 30s. Yeah, it's probably like 10 years ago. So early 30s, I was head of international procurement, you know, kind of on that track that I wanted to be on. But I've always been really curious to see all different sides of procurement. You know, I was more of a generalist in going from different categories, being involved in category management, then doing supplier management, doing risk management, all the different things, so I could see kind of the 360 view of procurement. So I had the opportunity to go into consulting and outsourcing. So I did that for a few years to get the other seat at the table. So the seat at the other side of the table, if you will, because now I'm delivering projects, I'm in more business development and selling and all that good stuff. And it got to a point, you know, where I just thought I'd always, it's that business thing at the beginning. You know, my school teacher, when I was 16, I remember always told me that one day I'll have a business. I was inspired by that probably. And also, it, you know, once she said that, that bug never left me. So I felt that I had to do it. And yet being the procurement person in me, risk averse, always looking at numbers and data, told me, don't be so stupid. You should never go and set up your own business. You know, the longer that you leave it, the harder it's going to get. And, you know, the kind of got to a point where I wasn't really enjoying the job that I was in. And I think two Christmases in a row, we had, you know, family get together and people were asking me about my job. And the first Christmas I said, you know, I'm not really enjoying it anymore and kind of fed up and all that stuff. And the second Christmas, I answered it exactly the same. And when I thought I'd answered it exactly the same 2 years in a row, I was like, what the heck? What am I doing about it? If I'm still unhappy, I got to do something. So I kind of disregarded all the numbers. My wife was pregnant with our first child and quit. And, you know, I stayed around at my company for about 6 months just to help with some transitions and went off on my own. You know, and I went off on my own, not with any plans. You know, a lot of folks know what I do around the podcast. That wasn't really the idea. It was really consulting first. But I just tried the, I thought, you know what, there's no podcast in the procurement space. This is 5 years ago. Maybe there's an opportunity for me to create something, to have folks get to know I can trust me because I know I need to network now that I have my own business. And it's an excuse for people to, for me to get the opportunity to talk to people I looked up to that ordinarily they'd say like, who's this bloke? So those were all the reasons why I guess Art of Procurement came to be.
So Art of Procurement, let's pretend our audience has no idea what Art of Procurement is. We know most of them do, but explain. So it's a podcast.
Yeah.
And what else? How is it evolving?
Yeah. So right now we basically have three different parts of Art of Procurement, if you will. We have the podcast and the webinars that we do, you know, kind of the content side of the business. And then we have a membership organization, a membership kind of offering within Art of Procurement that we've just launched actually. In the last couple of weeks here, and that's called AOP Mastermind. What that is, you know, looking at how can we help organizations really change the culture of their procurement teams. We talked earlier about, you know, what a sourcing hero looks like. You know, and sourcing heroes are the people that help procurement teams go from being tactical and transactional to being strategic. and being a trusted advisor, and the difficulty that organizations have in scaling that. Well, what Mastermind really is a way for a procurement leader to bring their entire team into a community that includes, you know, small training sessions. We have micro learning courses. We have procurement excellence forums. We have ways for folks from different industries to talk to each other, to have safe spaces, to share experiences, all those things that help kind of raise the game for everybody. And then we facilitate it by bringing in experts in particular fields. And so we just kicked that off, like I say, really a couple of weeks ago. And then we have a consulting side, which is really then helping companies, as opposed to in a community environment, it's more the one-on-one. You know, how can we help you drive transformation in your procurement organization, help you on specific deals, you know, with experts that we have access to, so that you're really making a difference. All around this idea of procurement really as a business rather than a function. So it's all about how do you connect what you're doing with the needs and the outcomes of the business, as opposed to showing up and, you know, running a process that might save some money, but everyone hates the outcome, and so they never use the supplier you picked. So yeah, those are really the three different elements of what we do now at Tata Procurement.
Such a robust model, and I think hits so many points that businesses and people in procurement who are managing procurement departments and all the functions within could really benefit from.
Thanks. Yeah, it's one of those things that's taken a while to evolve. You know, I think like many business owners, you spend a time being opportunistic. You know, you kind of chase the money because you need the money to keep the lights on. And you do things that don't necessarily, you know, you end up with products in silos. And so I think we suffered from that for a little while in the first few years of Tata Procurement, and really the last 12 to 18 months. You know, we took a look back and said, you know, what do we do and how does this all fit together? What should we really continue to focus on? What really doesn't fit? And that's really where we've come to focus on these three specific areas that we focus on today.
So let's pretend it's Christmas and I'm someone in your family. Mm-hmm. And I ask you, so Phil, how are you liking your job this year? What do you say?
Yeah, I love what I do. Is there things that I do that I'd rather not do? Sure. You know, but I think that's the same for every single job. I'm 5 years into this and, you know, I'm working harder probably than I've ever worked, but I'm not jaded. I'm not tired. You know, I wake up every day excited to see how we can inspire folks, how we can help them, how we can, frankly, you know, generate the revenue that allows us to continue to invest in the business. And I've never been more enthusiastic about what the future looks like. So
I love that. And it shows. It shows Yeah. Your passion really comes through in everything that you do.
It does, Phil. We love you, man. We love AOP. Yeah. And I think your story is incredible. And I think you're just getting started. So I mean
thank
that.
Thank you. No, thank you.
We're just getting started with the art of Phil Eidson.
Yeah.
Yeah. Come on.
Recurring show every month on our podcast.
I love it.
This is where you see that the lack of insights and expertise and experience is only goes so far. So hopefully we'll be able to bring out some nuggets in future podcasts.
Bring out the nuggets. Good Q&A. I think it could be phenomenal.
Yeah. No, looking forward to it.
I have a feeling that people are really going to love it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you again for coming on. This has been some really great conversation, some insight into the mind of Phil. Mm-hmm. Again, just appreciate the time and your support for the Sourcing Hero.
My pleasure. No, thank you so much. I loved the conversation and can't wait to do it again.
Thanks, Phil.
Thank you.
Love you, brother. See ya.